Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome back, Stephen Adams from Moxie Hair Salon for our sixth mentoring session. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
All right. Well, at our last session, there was an emotion that was kind of very pronounced that we ended up talking after our session about, which was being misunderstood by your staff. And so we decided that it would be good to come back and have you talk more about where you feel kind of misunderstood with your staff, because it's an educational opportunity.
Okay.
Awesome. So this is the curiosity behind our feelings. So when you get really curious about your feelings, it doesn't matter what they are. But if you just like question, like instead of, oh my gosh, I'm irritable and I feel misunderstood and I don't like that feeling, so I'm going to try to do something to cover it up or not bring it forward.
Right.
But if you had one little piece of curiosity that was sparked, that's an opportunity to investigate the emotion a little bit more. And then it kind of frees you up because then your perspective changes. Like the more that we talked about how you felt misunderstood, the more we asked more questions. So when you're feeling misunderstood, what happened with our discussion?
Well,
when we were off air.
Well, we were off air and we were talking. I don't know. It became a lecture again. No. I taught you something. No, I
think you did on hair that most of us don't realize the chemical differences with the hair. But you were talking about how when you were educating your staff, how you check out whether or not they're tracking.
Yeah,
it's what you're saying.
Yeah, it's. I think, like for me, when I am doing education, I think it's really important so that I try not to get understood. And a lot of times when you're teaching, you know, I always say there's like a 25-30 minute window of like time that people can actually like handle a lecture. And so I'm like doing a lecture and I have to stop and then I have to go through and ask and re-engage them by asking like, getting them back involved. So we were talking about hair, and I was just using examples of like, all right, tell me a little bit of what do you know about hair structure? And so then that way they can go in and they'll be like, oh, I know cuticle. And they'll talk about the cuticle, and then we can kind of go in depth with what the cuticle is and how many layers and how it works and what's the purpose of it and how it's the protectant of actually holding the hair together.
And we were talking, too, about different ethnic groups.
Yeah. And
have different types of hair.
Right. And there's a lot of people have fear about different textures of hair. And really, I always have the philosophy, hair is hair is hair. Well, actually, it's proven in science that hair is hair is hair. And it's just made up of 18 amino acids. It's the exact same amino acids that are throughout your whole body. We have 21 amino acids in our body. 18 of them, so majority of all the amino acids that either your body makes or you bring in through food all end up in your hair. And it's kind of
interesting.
And so every single person has the same hair structure. So like the foundation is the amino acids, which then make proteins and fibers. And so all of that is exactly the same on everybody. The only thing that makes hair different is the texture, and that texture is determined really by the cross bonds that are holding everything together. It's kind of like they're the bonds within the structure of the hair, and so the disulfide bond is the one that's the strongest out of them, and that's the one that determines really your curl or texture patterns. And then based on that, the more textured the hair is, the flatter the hair, the straighter the hair, the more circular it is.
And so when you're styling hair, how does that come into play?
Well, it comes into play a lot with, so like style, when you're styling hair, it's, you're breaking down the salt and the hydrogen bond, mostly the hydrogen bond, because water and heat break the hydrogen bond down so that you can smooth hair out. And the heat, so like if you're using a round brush and you're pulling tension to smooth some hair out, it's those are the bonds that you're breaking. But if you want to like permanently change hair structure, that's where chemicals come into play, like relaxers or permanent waving solutions, or, you know, even sometimes the keratin smoothing. And what they're actually doing, the relaxer and the perms are actually breaking down the disulfide bond, which is the strongest of the bonds. And it's breaking those down and then shifting them and replacing them with different, they're kind of like shifting the bonds.
Sure.
Easiest way to put it. And that's how you can straighten or make hair a little bit straighter, or you can change the curl pattern with a permanent wave. So it's kind of, it's really cool. So like my staff doesn't understand why I'm always talking about hair structure, but realistically, every single thing that they do throughout the day is affects the hair structure of each person and each individual.
Yeah.
So it's kind of sometimes I get misunderstood because they don't understand the importance of it. They might 15 years from now, but we'll keep them going.
Because they need some experience really become, oh, yeah, that's what Stephen meant. Right. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Takes a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So with when you have an educational program, to get the learning into the bones, because you're highly physical business. Like people, you know, they feel the hair, they're cutting the hair, they're interacting with the person. And so there's a lot of kinesthetic learning going on. You're talking to them, they see what's happening, but they're also doing something, so they're interacting. So I would imagine with your education program that the more hands-on that you can have in the learning process, the better.
For the most part, yes. Like today was a lecture day, so very little hands-on, which is hard. That's the hardest part. But now their next two trainings will be hands-on. First, we'll recap what we talked about. Then they do hands-on actual physical work to see how much they're retaining of the information that we went through.
So you're checking out what they're learning.
Exactly.
While you're going along.
And in between, they have homework, which is reading. So they've already heard my lecture. Then they have reading material that goes along with what I wrote, fairly similar to what I wrote.
Yeah.
Then they have videos to watch, so they get it.
All those different pieces we gotta over a period of time.
Each thing, so they have a few weeks to like study and learn, and to like hopefully on their own practice too.
Yeah.
So then when they come in and they actually bring in models and we again recap it, this time it hopefully will all come together. So we try to like really work on all learning types and to like make sure that we're hitting everything from visual to audio to having them writing it down to the kinesthetics of it, so that they're like getting every aspect of education. So like today we had lecture, and then the other half of our class, because we had two classes going on, the other half of the class was actually doing an evaluation. So this one, they got to do colors and cuts, whatever they want, creativity galore. And
talk about your staff and the core values that they had filled out, creativity is
one of the
high
highest
in it. So as an employer, then you're thinking, what are the things that I can do to really help these stylists feel engaged in their work, but also provide enough creativity so they feel like personally they're also engaged, they're using their creativity in a way that kind of helps them stay enthused about what they're doing.
That's
keeps them growing.
That's the plan. Hopefully, you know. What's funny though is when it comes to evaluation time, people want to be creative, but they're afraid to. And so they do as simplest things possible because they know they're being evaluated.
Yeah.
So, which is fine as long as we can see how the work is going. And so, like, they're kind of running on their own that day, and then the educators kind of guide them as they go throughout the day, but they keep track of, are they doing each little step that we have and making sure that they follow each of our systems, not just our systems, but then also the technical quality too. So we try to get all encompassing and just see where they're at. Kind of gives us a snapshot.
Sure.
So I still have to go through all that paperwork tonight to look and see how they did because I wasn't there.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. All right. So in our last session, we were also talking about Brené Brown's research in what she found interviewing thousands of people, is that she organized her research into an acronym that she uses for people to understand the anatomy of trust, and that is braving. And we had talked a little bit about boundaries. And if we looked at the next letter, the R, why don't we talk just a little bit about reliability?
Okay.
So reliability is you do what you say you'll do. At work, this means staying aware of your competencies and limitations so you don't overpromise and are able to deliver on commitments and balance competing priorities. So part of building trust with people is to set boundaries. So you respect my boundaries. And when you're not clear about what's okay and not okay, you ask. So you're willing to say no. As I was thinking about this just now, I was thinking about before I started We Mentor, I was teaching full-time in special education. And I knew I wanted to leave the profession and do it differently because mm-hmm. I just felt like I just needed to have my wings and fly yeah. and see what happens.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. And so I put up a sign I was living in an apartment complex at the time for typesetting and word processing. This was when it was just after the typewriters.
Yep.
And we got our first computers, and then there was the software. So it was in the 90s, early 90s. I guess Microsoft was, I'm trying
yeah,
to
Microsoft
think.
Yeah, Microsoft was around.
Yeah, that. So yeah, I was using the word, his Microsoft Word.
I didn't even know.
They didn't have Microsoft Publisher yet.
Probably not. I didn't use any of that stuff until after 99. Never touched a computer from like 84 until 99.
Okay.
So I don't know what happened during that years.
So as I was trying out this new business, I had someone bring, who had called me and said that they wanted a transcript transcribed and just typed out. It was like for a deposition for a court case. And so I typed it out and I told the person when it would be done. And I didn't meet the deadline. And the person came over and, you know, I was like, man, I was just so not reliable. Like, he was just fuming. Like, you could have called me, you know, and it was like, oh, I know. I could have called you, you know, but, you know, that was a case where my, you know, I lost trust with this customer.
Right.
Because he felt like I wasn't reliable. And I see myself as a reliable person. So that's where you think you're reliable, but every now and then we kind of mess up.
Yeah, I was going to say,
if
you don't mind, I was going to say, I noticed this, this is an interesting one because I think sometimes we'll talk about the staff or the, you know, our employees is a lot of times reliability is, they forget about this one, about timeliness. So yeah. Like being on time at work. Well, usually they're pretty good at being on time at work. But where they end up having reliability issues is like being late to clients, you know, without... one behind the other. And they yeah. like starting to get... If you're like 20 minutes behind on one, the next you're 40 minutes behind on the next. The next one you're like... And it just becomes a challenge. And so built into our education program, we really talk about timeliness, but... As soon as you know that your next guest is here, go talk to them.
Yeah.
Instead of letting them just flounder and sit and wonder like, oh, well, do they not even care that I'm here?
Yeah.
Because, it's really interesting. I'm liking this sheet already.
Okay.
It's going to like open my eyes for how I teach a little bit.
So. Yeah. Well, absolutely. I was like really surprised too in how eye-opening it was. Because I had thought about trust. Like I remember Stephen Covey's book mm-hmm. on, and he talked about the bank account, the emotional bank account, that, you know, when you do trustworthy things, that it adds into the emotional bank account.
Right.
And when you, you know, mess up, it takes out of the emotional bank account.
Right.
This is Seven Habits of Highly Effective People yep. by Stephen Covey. And so I was thinking about it in one way. You know, people are either putting in or pulling out. But I never understood exactly the other elements of trust, like reliability when people are not on time or, you know, not communicating about what's going on, you know, that takes out. I wouldn't have exactly used the word reliability.
Right.
To name that to fit in with the anatomy of trust.
No, I wouldn't have either. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's why the BRAVING acronym, I can think about it more in-depthly, and I think our listeners will be too.
Yeah.
And cool. How do you see, let's just move on to a couple more, and then we'll table the conversation for this session. But I think there's a lot to it. And so I'll be talking about it a lot with our listeners and with each person that's coming in for a mentoring session, because it affects all of us all the time. And this is new research, so we haven't had this placed in front of us in this way and put together in a way. That's why Brené Brown's work is so profoundly moving, because it has a practical element. She put it in a way that we can all understand it.
Yeah.
And we can do something about it. Like the third acronym is A, accountability. You own your mistakes, you apologize, and you make amends. Now, I find with accountability that if you're parceling it out to figure out, and it isn't about judgment, is it? When you think about accountability and you're calling someone on their stuff, you're saying, you said you would, you know, do this particular thing.
Right.
And you didn't totally finish it out. So what do you call that?
That's accountability.
You call it accountability?
Yeah, we do. Actually, it's in our guiding rules and principles. That's one of our things that we have is hold each other accountable.
So how do you explain when people get into the blame? Well, you're blaming me for this.
Right. And it just tried to, we basically say, like it's written in there, is approach all things with love, the way you want to be communicated to.
Yes.
So we don't want people to go into, you didn't do this, but hey, you know what?
Yeah, it's not the tattletale part.
It's not the tattletale part, but what we'd rather see.
And it's not blaming and shaming the person to make them feel horrible about themselves.
No. So let's say for some reason I'm going to use you as an example.
Yes.
Or you pretend that you're my.
Go ahead.
you forgot to clean the shampoo bowls out yesterday. So I'm not. That's not how I'm going to. I'm just setting the story.
Okay.
So my way of approaching it would be I would come in and I would probably approach it as part of our other guiding rules and principles, always go in asking.
Mm-hmm.
Where I would probably go, hey, I noticed that you were the first one in today. Did you notice anything different about the shampoo bowls?
So you give a person an opportunity.
I give them an opportunity
to kind of talk about where they messed up.
Yeah. So I want to go in asking first so that they can say.
So it's not accusatory.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, try to do it in the most caring way possible.
Yeah.
And that way they can come back and be like, oh, yeah, I kind of was in a rush. I totally forgot to clean the shampoo bowls. That way I can then go back, you know, why do you think it's really important to do that?
Yeah.
And that way they can come back with the response of whatever it might be. Well, there's lots of reasons. One, it's about safety and sanitation for the state law. But then two, it's to make sure that the guests are always happy because we want to clean for the guests. And then, so there's many, 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 many different reasons to it. So it's kind of, I think accountability is really important. And we each have to be very open to be held accountable. You know, people can hold me accountable too.
What if the person, when you ask the question, was in denial about it? So they're not taking responsibility for themselves. And so they were trying to shift the blame onto somebody else or, you know, pacify you with an answer that's maybe not truthful.
Right. That makes it trickier, but then you still have to at least be like, well, you were the last one. It's your responsibility to...
So you would have a... When you ask the question and then you give them opportunity, right, to come clean.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then they, and that person, if they do that, then you can understand where they're coming from. And then it also leaves an opening for you to give further education about the importance of it.
Exactly.
So the likelihood of them messing up in that same way is minimized.
One would hope. That's the plan.
Okay. So the person who doesn't follow that.
Yeah, then you have to change your approach. You give them that opportunity. They don't let you, and they're like, well, I didn't do it.
Wasn't my fault.
Wasn't my fault. Then you're going to be like, well, I just looked on the cleaning chart. Your chart, you were responsible for cleaning the shampoo bowls yesterday. Came in this morning, and they weren't clean up to standards. What can I do to help you so that you can do this cleaning better at the end of the night?
Okay, so you match them by choosing to help them get the job done.
Right. What can we do to make it better? How can we make it happen?
And does that work?
Sometimes.
And what happens when it doesn't work? What do you do next?
Oh, you're killing me.
I know.
Hope to goodness it doesn't get this, but it does once
in
a while.
Well, this is what happens, though, in anybody who's working with anybody. The accountability is like this huge issue.
I know.
So you've got one approach. You've got a second approach where you're really kind about it. You're right. Like you're living that value of kindness, love, generosity. You're expecting the best out of this person, and you're giving them the opportunity to like come forward. Like you're making it hard for them not to be accountable.
Well, I'm trying.
Yeah, that's really great. And then if that doesn't work, what do you do?
At that point, it's really, all right, you know what? They weren't clean. You're responsible. I need you to clean them. And then we'll go through and I'm like, I'm going to document that we talked about this. And this is the expectation that I have is that you're going to carry on with this. Next time you don't, there will be some
consequences. That you will not like.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's basically what all you can do at that point.
Yeah, because then you're realizing that they're not.
Well, one, they're not following our core values. They're not a team player.
Okay.
They're not seeing the value of it. They're not being honest. They're not.
Okay.
It goes back to
building trust.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if they're not buying into the honesty and the loyalty that you're building in the company, then this is where it shows up.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I think that has brought us to our closing for this sixth session.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been amazing. I mean, there's so much to learn about this. I'm really happy that we're collaborating on this process.
Yeah, no, I am too. This is really cool. It's helping me like put together thoughts in my head.
Yeah.
That I'm like, how can I now teach a class on holding people accountable?
Yeah, each one of these values, you know, from accountability to also the vault, holding things in confidence, to integrity, You know, you choose courage over comfort. You choose what is right over what is fun, fast, or easy. And you choose to practice your values rather than simply profess them. That's integrity. And then you've got non-judgment in there and generosity. I mean, each one you could teach a whole class on.
Right. No, yeah. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's very. And isn't it something that you can get your head around?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can talk from and you can put it back on them. How would you handle this situation if you were in the role of the
exactly.
educator?
Yeah.
Or if you were in charge of somebody, how would you handle it? Well, we've got a lot to chew on.
Yeah. No, this is awesome.
Good. All right. Well, thanks so much for being here, Stephen, and for being so courageous in bringing your core values of your company and doing these exercises that are really important. And I think that you're going to experience a lot of results with your team as they dig into the anatomy of trust deeper. I think your elevation of respect and trust and loyalty with the group will increase.
Cool.
Well, we'll keep our listeners involved in the process so they know how you're doing in a few months.
Yeah, it's always fun. So.
And we'll pull John back in and see what's happening with him.
Exactly.
Okay, very
cool.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Thanks, Stephen.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mike Cabea. My sound engineer, always on top of things.